Ticats and CFL family lost a legend this week as former Hamilton Tiger Cats quarterback Bernie Custis passed away at the age of 88. As many are probably aware, Bernie Custis became the first black quarterback in professional football history when he started for the Hamilton Tiger Cats in 1951. Custis spent 4 years with the Tiger Cats before ending his professional career with the Ottawa Rough Riders. After his playing days, Custis would go into coaching, and he was the head coach of the McMaster football team from 1981 until 1988. And it was in 1998 when Custis was enshrined in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. He was a legend and a trailblazer in every sense of the word, and he will be sorely missed by those that loved him and those that knew him. We here at Podski Wee Wee want to extend our sincere condolences to the family and friends of Bernie Custis. As a show of respect to Mr. Custis, we will have a brief moment of silence before we start the show.
Down, Cats inside the 15, into the end zone, 10 Owens, touchdown, fifth touchdown pass of the night for Kolaros, that's a new career best. First and goal, back in the end zone, touchdown. Can we call it a classic now, or not yet?
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, how you doing this week, buddy?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. Some exciting stuff in the off season. It seems to get more interesting every year. I don't know how they managed to do it, but all this stuff going on is quite exciting.
It felt like a true free agent frenzy this year, did it not? Like in years past, the first day, the second day, you'd see some moves, but it wasn't as like the big names going quickly. Like it felt like this year was, you know how the NHL has that show on TSN every year where they'll sit there for 8 hours and talk about all the moves, and just seems like guys are on the market for 30 seconds and then they're getting signed. Bang, 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 bang. It felt that way. Like once the first two or three signings came in, all of a sudden it felt like they were just rapidly coming in where rumors were flying out the wazoo. This guy's going there, that guy's going here. And it just felt like there was an excitement to it. And I don't know if you were on Twitter. I was all day, and it just felt like people were talking CFL ball, and it's like, man, it's February. This is pretty great.
Yeah, and there's been other news as well that's been making maybe fans that are non-fans of the CFL talking about the CFL as well. So we'll get into that a little bit later.
For sure we will. Let's start off, as you said, we got a ton of stuff to get to, so let's get right to it. Talking about some Ticats, non-free agent Ticats news. The big story, obviously, since you and I last sat down, was the release of Peter Diakowski, who then immediately signed with the Toronto Argonauts. What were your first thoughts upon hearing about Diakowski's release? And then after that, how did you feel about him signing up the road with the Double Blue?
Well, I wasn't really shocked about the release. I thought they might keep him around just for depth purposes. You know, he's a very experienced player, and if someone got injured, he could come in and do a pretty darn good job. But we've seen over the last couple of years that his play has kind of dropped off a bit, especially after that injury in the 2013 Grey Cup. He just didn't seem like the same guy after he came back. You know, you'd see him get blown by, get knocked over quite a bit. So I wasn't shocked. Kind of sad about the thing because he's a long-term Ticat player. He's one of the fan favorites, obviously, on the team. So it sucks to see him go, but I was not surprised.
I wasn't surprised either, and I'll be perfectly honest. When they extended Ryan Bomben last year and then moved up in the draft to the third overall pick to get Brandon Revenberg, to me the writing was on the wall then. I said to myself, and I never said it publicly because I was hoping that maybe he would stick around, but that to me was like, no, you know what? I think Peter's days are at an end here. They're, maybe he can go into that Tim O'Neill role that Tim O'Neill had here for a long time as that sixth offensive lineman, but
I thought, much like Chad Owens last year with the Argos, it would be difficult for Diakowski to sort of accept a lesser role and maybe lesser money that comes with said role and stick with the team. He gets a chance to start now with the Argos, and I wish him the best. There's been a lot of consternation, a lot of back and forth on social media, especially about, do we boo Peter Diakowski when he comes back to Hamilton? And I say absolutely. He's now a member of the Argos. We boo the Argos. And that we're not necessarily booing Peter. We're booing the team he plays for. And I think Peter would understand this. I think he gets this rivalry, having been on one side of it, better than almost anyone else. Last year when Brian Hall moved over from Hamilton to Toronto, he got into fans' faces on social media and he had fun with it and he expected to be booed, and he understood that that's what comes with the territory. You go from one team to their rival, you're the enemy. The thing is, though, is there's not going to be many chances to boo Peter Diakowski simply because he is an offensive lineman, so it's not like he's going to score a touchdown and then people are going to hear his name and get a chance to boo, you know what I mean?
So it'll just be like the maybe when he comes out onto the field type of thing, because, yeah, it's not like he touches the ball and the fans can boo and everyone knows who they're booing. So it's going to be tough to get a boo on Diakowski.
But there was a tweet out there that I saw that was Peter Diakowski, Canada's smartest person, but the CFL's dumbest free agent. I really hope someone makes that a sign, that someone that sits behind the Argos bench or the opposing team's bench when the Argos come and play here on Labor Day. I really hope someone has a sign that says something like that, because I saw that and I started cracking up.
Yeah, that's pretty good. We've seen some interesting players sign with the Argos, so maybe it's not such a dumb decision. We'll have to find out, I guess.
So what did you think about him signing with the Argos? How did that make you feel?
To be honest, the recent past, so many Ticat players going to the Argos, I wasn't shocked, but I'm kind of ticked off about it. I mean, it was so immediate. I actually kind of thought that he might retire, but, you know, you can't be mad at the guy for signing with a team that wants him, and he'll extend his career by a couple more years now. So, no, I'm not too mad about the whole thing.
No, I'm not mad at him signing with the Argos either. I think, like I said, I think he's going to embrace being on the other side of this rivalry. I think he's going to be everything he was for Hamilton fans. I think he can be that for Argos fans. I actually think this is a good move for the league, for a guy like Diakowski, who, as a player who plays a position that doesn't have much prominence, is kind of a guy who's out there. Like, he's a name that I think fans around the league know simply because he was Canada's smartest person. He was on Jeopardy. Like, you don't normally see offensive linemen sort of, I don't want to say face of the franchise, because I don't think that's correct, but be this vocal, this out there. I think this is a good move for the Argos. The media there is going to love this guy. He is very well spoken.
They pay attention to him. They won't pay attention to him or the Argos. So,
but if they do, I'm saying I'm working here with, I'm trying to be positive. I'm trying to be positive here, buddy. He's a guy that he's smart, he's funny, he's well-spoken. Like, this is someone who you can market around and put him out there as the guy that does the media appearances. You know he's great in the community. Like, I think this is a good move for them as like a team, as like a friend. I just think this is going to work out well. Now, on the field, I don't know, because we discussed, and I completely agree with you, that after that injury in the 2013 Grey Cup, he has been the same player, and that was a devastating injury. He missed pretty much the entire season. That's tough to come back from, and I still think he has something left to offer, but I'm not sure if he is going to be the guy. Like, I don't know if he can go back to being the 2012 version of Peter Diakowski anymore. I think we're definitely seeing a guy on the tail end of his career, and I wish him well in Toronto. I really do, but they're the Argos, so I hope they never win.
Yeah, he's a character. That's what he is. He's a character, and so is Brian Hall. So now they have two interesting guys on that Argos team that can, you know, if the media actually pays attention to them, could give them probably some pretty interesting interviews. So hopefully that happens.
Diakowski's release wasn't the only move the Ticats made outside of free agency. They made a couple of trades, too. The first involved – well, they both involved the Montreal Alouettes. The first, they sent linebacker Frederic Plessis to the Owls in exchange for linebacker Nick Shortle. And then just today, as we record this on Thursday evening – they sent offensive lineman Brian Simmons to Montreal for defensive back Ethan Davis. So let's talk about the first trade, the Plessis for Shortle trade. I don't want to get into like who won, who lost, because I don't think we'll ever really know that. But to me, this is a pretty good trade for the Ticats. They basically swapped the exact same player, except they got about 5 years younger by getting Shortle for Plessis. And Plessis gets to go to Montreal and possibly compete for a starting job, which is good for him. The Ticats get a guy who went to McMaster, so he's a local-ish guy that they can kind of build around, and he's younger and maybe one day could start for the team. I don't know, but he's definitely a great special teams player. Plessis was a great special teams player. This to me is like a almost like the perfect win-win trade, no?
I'd have to say so. I mean, these guys were two special teams guys for the most part, and Plessis had some potential in the day. He still might be a starter in this league. Who knows? But like you said, if they can get younger and still have that presence with Shorthill on the special teams, then I think it's a good deal for the Ticats, and it might turn out to be a good deal for the Alouettes if they can help the ratio with a linebacker that's Canadian as a starter.
I totally agree. The second trade, Simmons for Davis. I think this is the Ticats trading from a position of strength. And trying to address the weakness. We'll get into it when we talk about free agency, but this team has spent an awful lot of time accumulating defensive backs. They are trying to fix that secondary. They recognize that that was the problem with this team last year. I think the moves they've done have maybe not solidified the secondary as being the class of the league, but it looks a lot better today than it did when we recorded prior to free agency starting. And I think there's another move. They trade Simmons, who they have a glut of offensive tackles. They had Xavier Fulton, Jake Olson, Jeremy Lewis, and Simmons. All of those guys were not going to make this team. So you trade a guy like Simmons, 31 years old, probably on the tail end of his career, gave a ton to the city, was a great player for the Ticats, but I think we've seen he got passed up last year for players, and it looks like his career's coming to an end sooner than I think anyone would have expected. And they get a younger player. I want to say Davis was a rookie last year with Montreal, started for them at the beginning of the season. He's a rookie, so he had some poor performances. He was benched, and he was six-gamed. But again, they get younger here as well. Simmons, 31. Davis, I believe, is 24. So, again, it's not saying winner or loser, but Montreal gets they want to start an American offensive tackle. Simmons can start at right tackle or left tackle if you need him to for Montreal, and the Ticats are trying to find DBs. It seems like another trade that both teams get exactly what they want out of it.
Yeah, we're both fans of Simmons over the years, and they brought him back last year, and they gave him a shot again, and it didn't really work out. So I like the trade as well. So Simmons would have been another depth guy like Diakowski, in my opinion. So if they already have a bunch of depth that's younger and has more potential, then I think this is a good deal.
And Davis started for the Alouettes last year, I believe, at boundary corner, which is one of the spots, maybe the only spot in the secondary that's still kind of open for competition. So bringing in more camp bodies, especially to vie for this position, might make, a rising tide lifts all boats, as they say. Maybe a battle between three or four guys for that job might produce a gem.
I just hope they're not getting too confident about the offensive line. You know, they let Diakowski go, they let Simmons go. And, if there's injuries and all that stuff and the guys that come in aren't up to par, then we might have a season like we did last year. Zach Cleris might be injured again like last year. So, it's a risk, but everything in football is a risk. So we'll just have to see if their confidence in the O-line is for real and if they can do the job that they're supposed to do next season.
So that's all for the Ticats outside of free agency, but there were some other moves in the CFL that weren't free agent related. The Ottawa Redblacks made a trade and acquired Drew Tate from the Calgary Stampeders for what I believe was a fifth round pick. And then they signed him to a contract extension, I think, until the end of the 2018 season. Drew Tate is the reason that Henry Burris was let go in Calgary. And now he kind of takes over for Henry Burris in Ottawa. He's obviously not going to be the starter. That's Trevor Harris's job. But it's kind of funny how Tate bumped Burris out of Calgary, then Burris leaves Ottawa and Tate takes his place. But what do you think about this trade? Because I've seen both elation and people just groaning because there's a lot of opinions out there on Drew Tate.
I've always got the thought that Drew Tate doesn't, I don't know, like in the last couple of years, he's just happy to be a backup, and that usually doesn't happen with professional quarterbacks. They want to be starters, and this guy just seems to be like, meh, whatever. I'll just sit on the bench and collect my check, and I don't really want to play anyways. So I don't really like that attitude in a quarterback. I think that you should want to be the starter. But he's had some success in the league. He, early on, like you said, he was supposed to be the incumbent to Burris, take over that Calgary team, take it into the future. That didn't happen, obviously. Bo Levi Mitchell emerged, but Since then, it's just kind of been, you know, the last game he played was against the Alouettes last season to keep the perfect season alive, or the 17-1 season alive for the Stampeders. And he didn't look that great. So that's just one game. But I just don't know if he has the fire anymore. And if something happens to Harris and he comes in, I don't know if he can fill his shoes.
Well, I'm as not a Red Blacks fan, but as someone who looks at this, if I was a Red Blacks fan, I'd be a little concerned. Trevor Harris, now the last two seasons, his season last year in Ottawa and the year before in Toronto, has been benched at the tail end of the season. We saw him taken out of the Argos lineup for Ricky Ray. We saw him benched for Henry Burris. It seems like he gets to the tail end of the season and he just kind of he loses it almost, and they have to go to the number two guy. Like, if you look at how Harris played in Toronto at the beginning of the season and then in Ottawa last year at the beginning of the season, he was looking like an MOP candidate. And then it just seems like his play got worse and worse and worse, and then he would spike and have a great game, and then it would – he just doesn't seem as consistent as I think you would like. So with that in mind, it feels like maybe Drew Tate might have to play it, and I'm kind of with you. Ian Busby for Three Down Nation wrote an article about why the Stampeders traded Tate, and in it he mentions it feels like he kind of lost that competitive fire, and you brought that up. And if he has, is he really going to be able to get it back in going to a situation where he not necessarily will have to be the savior, but he's walking in as the backup, and he seems okay with that. And that's fine. There are players out there who are going to be backup quarterbacks, but you rarely ever hear them say, I'm fine being a backup. Like Jeremiah Mazzoli here is a great backup, but if he wants to be the starter, you know what I mean? It seems strange to see a player be like, yeah, no, I'm happy just being the number two guy, especially a quarterback. You want that guy who's like, no, I'm the best quarterback on this roster and I want to start. Trevor Harris did that last year. And even though that he believed going into that situation in Ottawa that he was the best quarterback on the roster, and he played like it sometimes, didn't play like it other times, and ultimately was taken out of the lineup at the end of the season, and Burris came in and they wrote that to a Grey Cup championship. But if I'm a Red Blacks fan, I'm very concerned about this trade if Harris goes down, because I don't know if Drew Tate can lead them for any extended period of time.
Yeah, I have to agree. My confidence in Drew Tate has really dropped over the last couple of years. I thought he looked like a bona fide starter when he first came into the league, but yeah, it's just a question of where his head's at, in my opinion.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation with a coworker a few years ago. It was the year that Calgary got to the Grey Cup and lost to Toronto, the 100th Grey Cup. And Glenn was the starter, but Tate was there. And Tate wasn't starting because he had broken his wrist, I believe, 2 weeks ago. And that's kind of been – that was the story of Drew Tate's early career, is he would start the season as a starter. He would look great, and then he'd get hurt. And I remember we were talking, like, we both really loved Drew Tate as a player. I thought this could be the guy that's the next great CFL quarterback. And I remember when he was playing at Iowa in the NCAA, and I thought he was great there. And it's just – it never came together for the guy. And now you sort of see this attitude of him being like – and I know he's getting up there. He's in his 30s. And like just like with Simmons and like with all players who get in their 30s, the end is closer than the beginning. But it is just weird to see a quarterback be happy being the backup. I don't know – at least I can't think of off the top of my head – any situation where any quarterback has been happy being the number two.
No, neither can I. He kind of reminds me of like a Rob Johnson surfer dude type guy. You know what I mean?
Kind of laid back. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, you just want a little edge in your quarterback. You want him to want to be number one. That's about it.
Yeah. Even if he's not going to be, you want him to have that fight where he pushes the guy that's number one. Yeah. I totally understand.
Yeah, totally. We're on the same page on this one, Josh.
Okay, so then let's move on, since we seem to be agreeing on most things. Let's move on to something we maybe won't agree on this one. But there's rumors out of Toronto that they may have zeroed in on who their general manager is going to be and who their head coach is going to be. I think it was a couple nights ago there was a picture taken at a Maple Leafs game of Jim Popp sitting with Larry Tannenbaum, who we know is one of the owners of the Toronto Argonauts, and that's led to speculation that Jim Popp will be the next general manager of the Toronto Argonauts. And that's also led to speculation that he will be bringing Mark Trestman, the former head coach of the Montreal Alouettes and Chicago Bears and offensive coordinator extraordinaire in the NFL, back with him to be the head coach of the Argos. Now, I think anyone would say if you get Pop and Trestman in Toronto, that is a great move. But they're still going to get them in like late February, early March, which to me, considering Pop was fired November 7th, how come this move? You could have fired Barker. You could have got these guys. Like, to me, it's not – I think that the acquisition of these two guys will be great for that franchise. The timing is still terrible.
Doesn't make sense. From what I've heard from media members such as Dave Naylor and guys that are close with the situation or know what's going on, they talked about how Copeland went out and tried to find, you know, an NFL name for GM, and that search was going on, and, you know, people backed out of the situation, and it's just – you're right. Jim Popp and Mark – if Jim Popp and Mark Trestman come in, it'd be great. They have tons of CFL experience. It'd be better than what they were thinking of, bringing in an NFL guy who doesn't know anything about the league. If you brought in Jim Popp and Mark Trestman, guys who have had, you know, great success in this league, I think it's a great thing. It's just, why didn't they, you know, that should have been plan A. They should have went after those guys right off the bat, brought them in early, and then they could have hit the ground running, and they would have done a lot better in free agency, and players would want to play for Mark Trestman. They just would. They know his success and all that stuff. So, yeah, you're right. It's a good move, I think, if they bring them in, but it's just, I mean, we're in March almost now, so we're getting to the nitty-gritty, so they better make a decision pretty damn quick.
Let's say they make this announcement. Let's go March 1st because they're finalizing the deal and it's not official. March 1st, they announce Toronto Argonauts have hired Jim Popp as general manager and Mark Trestman as head coach. If that was the announcement that was made December 1st, we're having a whole different conversation about the Toronto Argonauts all through the offseason than we are right now. They would have had everything in place, a plan ready to hit, like you said, hit the ground running. They would get their free agents. They would have known what to do at quarterback. Like, I've heard, and this I believe it was in the Toronto Sun, where the rumor is Pop's the GM, Trestman's the head coach, Tommy Condell will be the offensive coordinator, Rick Stubler will be the defensive coordinator, and Ricky Ray will be the starting quarterback. If Ricky Ray is going to be the starting quarterback for the Toronto Argonauts, now they have Drew Willie there as well, who's not like it. Just this thing could have been completely avoided. This whole garbage show could have been completely avoided if they would have made this move, like you said, like right away. Like, it didn't have to be like the second Pop was fired, they hire him the next day. But if they would have gotten rid of Barker after the season was over, Milanovic would have been able to leave. It's just the timing of it. I think the names are great. I think Jim Popp is GM, Mark Trestman is head coach. If those two guys can't get the Argos turned around, I don't know if anyone can on the field. I mean, off the field, it's a completely different story. But think of all the stories we heard about guys who didn't sign with Toronto in free agency that we'll get to in a little bit because they were worried about the football plan. They lost out on a ton of big-name free agent players that if they have Pop and Trestman and a coaching staff and all that stuff in place, maybe they snag Ernest Jackson and they snag Derek Dennis and maybe Abdul Kane and Emmanuel Davis are in Toronto. And we're sitting here going, the Argos are the favorite to win the Grey Cup, essentially, or at least win the East. Now we're sitting here going, they've made some additions. Some of them are pretty good. Some of them not so much. But they don't have a coach. They don't have a GM. Like, we're having a completely different conversation today if this move's made 3 months ago than we are if it's made in, say, a week.
I think most of those players sign with the Argos if they have Jim Popp and Mark Trestman in place. I mean, Ernest Jackson was close with them without those guys. And there were players interested, you know, that didn't sign on the dotted line, but we're close to signing on the dotted line from what I've heard. So if you have those guys in place, I think you bring in a lot. I think Chad Owens probably signs there. I think you bring in a lot. I think they brought in some good pieces, but I think you get a level above those pieces if those guys are in place. So and listen, Jim Popp, Mark Trestman, Condell's offensive coordinator, Stubler, that's pretty damn good coaching staff right there, and I think they could do a lot of damage, and they still could if they bring those guys in, but it's going to be a lot more difficult than what it would have been if they brought them in, say, December or early January.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the Argos, if they make this move, are going to be a better team, maybe not necessarily in 2017, but in 2018, with these guys in place, able to implement their plan, I think the Argos could be a team to be reckoned with, as hard as that is to say.
Now, those signings don't do anything for them off the field. Nothing.
No. The off the field stuff, that's a whole. I mean, that
a name like Mark Trestman name like Mark Trestman doesn't bring in the NFL fan. But one name does, you know, if they bring in that quarterback that everyone's been talking about, that does. We talked about this last time we recorded, but, you know, bringing in an NFL GM or whatever, that's not going to bring in fans to the stadium. Mark Trestman, you know, he's a big name, and with CFL fans and NFL fans are aware of him, but, you know, they're not going to come in and watch a head coach. They're going to come in and watch a star player, not a star head coach. But, you know, that's besides the point. They're trying to get things fixed on the field as well. So that would be a big step in doing that.
For sure. For sure. You ready to talk some free agency then? That's why we're here today, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's we're a Ticats podcast. So let's talk about the Ticats. Let's start with who they signed. And we kind of touched on it a little bit when we talked about the secondary earlier, but man, oh man, they went out and they severely upgraded that secondary. They brought in Abdul Kanne from Ottawa and they re-signed Emmanuel Davis. And all last year, what were the things we were talking about? This secondary is atrocious. Emmanuel Davis, however, was the one bright spot. He was a division all-star. He's back on a two-year deal. Kinnaid signed a two-year deal. You're looking at getting Craig Butler back after missing a year with an injury. That bumps Courtney Stephen out to the field side cornerback position. Right there, those four defensive backs there, this before we've even had a practice with this team, that secondary is already better.
Oh, massive upgrade. And that was the one thing. I mean, they could not stop the passing game last year. The secondary was very poor at tackling, wrapping up guys. Players were breaking tackles like crazy. It's good to see them really focus in on the secondary in this offseason, because if they didn't, you know, we'd be in trouble again next year. The offense would have to score a hell of a lot of points. So I think this is great, and I'm just excited to see these guys get on the field.
Well, Kinney's a hitter. Butler is a hitter. Stephen at the field corner can be a little bit more aggressive than he could have been at safety. I look at the defensive backfield and I get a smile on my face. Yeah. It's not perfect, and there's not it's not completely solidified, but from where we were at the end of last season to where we are today, you can't be anything but happy.
No, this defense could be very intimidating. Like you said, we have hitters in the secondary, we have hard-hitting guys in the linebacking corps, we have big dudes up front that'll knock your helmet off. So this team could be very intimidating on the defensive side, and that's something that Hamilton Tiger Cats football is all about, you know, hard-hitting defensive football. So hopefully we see that come back to Hamilton next year.
Well, John Chick was what, second or third in the league in sacks last year with a pretty porous secondary. Imagine what he's going to be able to do this year with a secondary that can cover for that split second or that, you know, that 1 second longer. And he gets that extra half step to get to the quarterback. Maybe those 14, 15 sacks turn into 20 sacks or turn into more pressures or tip balls or forced fumbles. Like the whole defense, it works in tandem. If the secondary is covering well, that allows the linebackers to blitz more, which allows the pass rush to be better. If the pass rush is good, it means that the secondary can play a little looser. And now that they got some veterans back there, and like this is a pretty veteran-laden team. They're not old by any stretch of the imagination, but they have guys who have been in this league a long time. And I think the fewer rookies this team plays, I think the better they're going to be. I look at this roster, both offensively and defensively, and obviously we sit here and go, well, if they stay healthy, and that never happens, guys are going to get hurt, it's just the way it is. There is not a lot of holes in this Ticats team right now, Mike.
I don't really know. I agree. They've really done a great job in this offseason. You know, the secondary and the offensive line, re-signing guys like Folden, who did a great job last season, in my opinion. And, you know, maybe Jake Olsen is back next year, and maybe he plays right tackle. So you have two big, productive American tackles on the offensive line, which could be really good with those three Canadians in the middle who are stellar. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of exciting things to look at this Ticats team, and I think we're going to be better than 7-11 this year. But, you know, it's still really early, but you just get that feeling.
Well, I think every team, every fan of every team has that optimism right now of, Oh my God, we look so like every team, every fan thinks their team won free agency and every all the other teams lost. And I'm not sitting here worried about winning or losing free agency. How many free agency periods did we as Ticat fans win in the mid 2000s? And yet they won like 15 games in 4 years. So it's not about winning. It's about supplementing what you already have. And I think the Ticats did a great job of that. Something we haven't even talked about yet. Brian Timms re-signing. I think that's an under the radar move. This is a guy who came in last year, had a bit of an audition at the end of the season, and yeah, I think he played pretty damn well, and I'm kind of excited to see what he could do over a full season.
Yeah, I thought he played exceptional when he got in there. He produced. He caught some balls, made some touchdowns, I believe. So obviously, the coaching staff sees something in this guy to re-sign him, and he'll be a cheaper option, and he could be a star this year. You never know. So yeah, I like Timms, and I think he'll produce this season.
Well, and think if they do get Terrell Sinkfield back, it's another thing we're going to talk about. So he hasn't signed with the team, but apparently he will if he doesn't land an NFL job. In an article published by Drew Edwards on Three Down Nation, he writes, Sinkfield has reportedly agreed to a contract in principle to return to the Ticats, but has until April to take advantage of any NFL opportunity should one materialize. So unless Terrell Sinkfield is playing on Sundays in the NFL, he's going to be back with the Ticats. And then you look at that receiving core and you go, Terrence Tolliver, Luke Tasker, Brian Timms, Terrell Sinkfield, Junior Collins, perhaps. Then you got all the Canadian guys, Mike Jones, Spencer Watt, like Andy Fantuz, who probably won't play this year if he comes back, but maybe they add into the season. Like, the wide receiving core looks pretty darn good. Like, I know we're sitting here and we say it's early, but if Zach Caleros gets the time on what I'm hoping is a much better, much more cohesive offensive line, and he can find these guys are going to get open for days. This is going to be an exciting offense to watch.
Yeah, you got everything you want in receivers. You got the speed, the height, the possession receiver and Tasker. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about this team, and the receivers are one of them as well. So if they get Sinkfield back, I mean, this guy's a game changer in my opinion. He didn't light the world on fire last year when he came back to BC, but you know, that's a tough situation coming in after NFL tryouts late in the season, trying to adapt to the new offense, all that stuff. So if he could come in training camp with the Ticats, you know, he's familiar with the system. I know that, you know, Condell isn't there anymore. It's not the exact same, but it'd be very similar. He's familiar with Claros, all that good stuff. So bringing him in would help out this team tremendously.
This team also lost some players to free agency, and quite a few, actually. I'll run them down here. Matt Coates signed with Winnipeg. Ja'Cory Harris signed with Montreal. Bo Landry went to Calgary. Kendall Lawrence went back to Edmonton. Jeff Matthews signed in Toronto. Drake Nevis signed in Winnipeg. Ronald Mara signed in Ottawa. Chad Owen signed in Saskatchewan. Johnny Sears went to Toronto. Anthony Woodson went to Calgary. And reportedly, Rico Murray will be headed to the Argos as well. I look at this list, and there's not, in my opinion, that back-breaking, oh my God, I can't believe the Ticats didn't bring this guy back. I would have liked to have seen Drake Nevis return, but Drake Nevis had a pretty good year last year, and he took over for a guy in Brian Hall who had a pretty good year before him. I trust that this team is going to be able to find an American defensive tackle to pair up with Ted Laurent, because we've seen it in now the last 3 years that they've been able to find someone to do that. And Chad Owens, as odd as it is to say, a year after it was like, I can't believe this team signed Chad Owens. I'm a little bummed to see Chad Owens leave. I thought, when healthy, man, he was really good for this team last year. But I understand why they let him go. He got a big pay bump in Saskatchewan. And this team with Timms, we just went through. I'm not going to do it again. We went through all the receivers. There wasn't really a spot for Chad Owens. And if it came down to they can retain Chad Owens or they can bring in Terrell Sinkfield, as much as I love Chad Owens as a Ticat, which is the weirdest thing I think I'll ever say on this show, and as much as I wanted to see him back, if Sinkfield would have been here last year, they probably don't go after Owens. And I'd rather have Sinkfield than Owens, based on skill set now, age, of course. So I don't know about you, but I don't look at this list of guys that the team lost. Like, you look at they lost two quarterbacks, but those were quarterbacks they were never going to bring back anyway. They have their number one. They have their number two. Everett Golson is a guy that they want to get a look at as their number three. They'll probably bring in another quarterback in training camp. Like, they lost some special teams guys, but through the draft and through some guys they have in their roster, they're going to have to step up. They made the trade for Shortle, so he's a guy that's going to play special teams. Like, I don't see any back-breaking blows here for the Ticats. Anthony Woodson, I like Anthony Woodson, but They have Mercer Timmis now, so they don't need Anthony Woodson. So I don't know about you, but I, there's not a move here where I'm just like, oh, I'm not pissed off that none of these guys returned. But like I said, the only two I look at and was like, I would have been okay if they were back are Nevis and Owens. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd have to go with Nevis. I mean, guys that I would be happy if they brought back, but obviously I'm not too upset that they left. But I would have gone Nevis, Owens, and Rico Murray. Rico's been a good player for this team over the years, and he brings a lot of experience and all that stuff, just like those other guys, except for Nevis. He's kind of young, but yeah, I'm not too concerned with all these guys we've lost because of the acquisitions we've made and the depth that we have on this team. Guys can step up and fill those roles. Maybe not quite as good right off the bat, but they'll eventually get there, I believe.
Okay, so I want to talk about free agency around the league, but I don't want us to sit here and be bogged down with talking about every big move from every team, every player. I figured I think this would be a fun way to do it. We're going to have three categories. We're going to have a love it, a like it, but with some reservations, and a hate it. So we're going to do that for both individual moves. We're going to name one in each category, and then we're going to do it for teams. So, Mike, what is your one love it move as a player in free agency? What's the one player moving to teams, or stay, you can even pick a guy that stayed with their team. What's the one move that you love more than any other in free agency this year?
I love the Winston Venable acquirement by the Argos. I mean, just have to give it to them for getting a great player, a great linebacker to come into their team when they don't have a coach or GM. So I think that Venable has been great for the Alouettes over the years, and they put him in that linebacker for the Argos, and he's going to do an absolutely magnificent job for them, I believe.
Okay, that's a pretty good move. When they signed him, I was like, kudos, because Venable has been a really, really good linebacker for the Alouettes, and they just didn't have room for him, and the Argos getting him does improve that defense a lot. My love it move is Chris Williams to the BC Lions. We talked about this before we started recording, but holy hell, man, that receiving core with Williams and Arsenault and Burnham, oh, that is, not only is it going to be fun to watch, but I feel sorry for the other eight defensive coordinators in trying to figure out how to slow down that offense. If Williams is 90% of what he used to be coming off that ACL injury, this offense is going to be absolutely killer. That is a three-headed monster that I don't think any team in this league can touch. Those might be three of the six best receivers in the CFL. I know Williams is coming off an injury, and that would maybe put him in the like it with reservations category for some, but I think he's going to come back, be just as good as always, and that BC team is going to be nightmare for other teams to stop.
Yeah, it's a scary thought to think of those receivers with an up-and-coming quarterback. Like, it's just they're going to be a joy, like you mentioned before, to watch this season, I think. I think it's going to be high-scoring, exciting football in BC this year, and I hope the fans show up.
They are going to make it very hard for me to fall asleep when those Lions games start here at 10 o'clock at night. I'm going to want to stay up and watch them play because that offense is going to be super fun. What's your like-it move, but with some reservations?
Now I'm picking the Argos again. I'm going with Jeff Fuller. I like the move. I think he's a talented dude. He's 6'4", 223. He's, has decent speed. He's been a proven commodity in this league, but the injuries have really followed him around like a plague. It's been tough. I mean, I remember that one game last year?
The one? Are you going to talk about the one against Hamilton?
Yeah, where he just lit them up. Just a crazy game. It was just spectacular to watch.
Made that amazing catch to set up the game-winning field goal. That was week one of the 2015 season, I think. Because wasn't he in the end? Didn't he start in the NFL? Like, not to cut you off, but I'm pretty sure last year when we were doing our free agent preview, you predicted Jeff Fuller to the Argos. So you were right, just a year too late.
Yeah.
Well, you were a year too early. The move was a year too late.
I believe he went down to the NFL for a bit. Didn't catch on, maybe with the Chargers. I'm not sure. I can't remember. But
yeah, and then came back with Saskatchewan, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, yes.
And then I think he got hurt again.
Yeah, he did. So that's the thing. I mean, I like this move, but you got to have some reservations because you got to think that this is plan B to Ernest Jackson. You know what I mean? So he's a great talent. He just has to stay healthy. And I know that's the same with every player, but this guy's had a history of being injured constantly. So it's a good move, but there's a lot of potential for risks there.
It's funny you bring up Ernest Jackson because he plays into my like it but with reservations move, and that's the dual signing of Kenny Shaw and Deontay Spencer in Ottawa. They probably spent a little bit less than it would have cost to bring Ernest Jackson back, so I can't fault Ottawa pardon me, for getting two players for the price of one. But I think a lot of people are overvaluing Shaw and Spencer. They're looking at them going, these guys have so much potential, and I agree, they have potential. But Shaw did crack the 1,000-yard receiving mark last year, but by the end of the season, he was literally the only receiver. Well, not literally, but he was pretty much the only receiver that the Argos had, so they had to throw to him. And Spencer, for all of the hype, he didn't really do a ton last year. I think he can still be a decent receiver. He's fast as a hiccup, so I don't think these are bad moves. I think they're two moves that have the potential to be great moves, but as I sit here right now, I go, I'm not sure if I might have been more inclined to bring back Jackson because he knows the system, you know what he's like. But you can't be mad to get two guys for the price of what it would cost you to get one. It's just that this move to me is either boom or bust. Like, I don't think there's going to be really any in between. These guys are either going to perform as the people who are being very positive expect, or they're going to completely fall flat on their face. So that's why it falls into this middle tier for me.
Yeah, it's I'd have to agree with everything you said. It's an interesting move, and it could pay off huge, or it could flop. I mean, I like Spencer a lot, and Shaw's a good receiver too. So they bring kind of the same dynamic as smaller, speedy receiver to the Ottawa Red Blacks. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. You know, they lost some really talented receivers in the offseason, Williams and Ernest Jackson. So. I don't know if those guys are I know that they're not at the same level as those guys at the moment, but they could be eventually, so we'll see.
Yeah, like essentially Shaw's replacing Jackson and Spencer's replacing Williams, and while these guys have the potential to be great players, they're not those players. Deontay Spencer will not approach, even if he has the best season of his career, he's not going to approach Chris Williams' numbers. Like Chris Williams, if he would have played the entire season last year, would have been over 1,600 yards receiving, and he had 10 touchdowns before he got hurt. Like, he was putting up massive numbers. Obviously, we remember how he started the season with, like, 500 yards in the first, like, three games or two games or something. Like, he was crushing it last year. So I don't think you're going to get that out of them, but that's who these guys are replacing, and those are big shoes to fill. So what's your hate-it move? What's the one move that happened in free agency where you're just like, this is not going to work?
Shamont Chambers back to the Eskimos. Now, I know you like Chambers, and I like Chambers too, but it's just not – he's not – his potential hasn't been reached, and it's getting late in his career, and I don't know why they went back to the well and brought Chambers back. He's just not the guy we thought he was, I don't think, and I think it's a bad move by them. Even though he's a Canadian guy and it's Canadian talent, you can't go wrong with Canadian talent. I just don't think he's going to live up to the expectations.
Do you get sick of hearing he was the Grey Cup's most valuable Canadian as much as I do? Because that might be the least. No, he had like two catches for like 50 yards. Yeah. Like the least deserving award, singular award in like a football game's history. Like it was like they gave it to him because they had no one else to give it to.
Yep. He had two good plays and that was about it. And, you know, maybe I think there was a defensive breakdown and the one big gainer he had, and you know that that happens in football. You can't put the blame on Chambers for a defensive mistake, but you're right, it's he was the only Canadian I guess that really even stood out a bit in that game.
So I don't have a hate it move from free agency, because I looked at all, I tried to find one, I really did, so, but I was lucky in the fact that the Drew Tate trade came around before we recorded, because that gets a major thumbs down for me. We talked about it at the earlier in the show. I just don't like this move. I just think if you're going to have to rely on him at any point in the season to take this team for two or three games, I just don't see how that can be successful. So with the free agency stuff, nothing stood out to me, although you do make an excellent point about the Chambers move. I can't disagree with you there. But, yeah, the Tate trade is the one for me that's just like that's the head nod. That's the not for me.
Yeah, it's like, does he care? Does he care about this team? Does he care if they win? I'm not sure. Obviously, I don't know him personally, but just the vibe that he gives off, it just doesn't seem like he cares that much about professional football or the CFL or the team he's playing on. I could be completely wrong about that, but it just seems that way.
Here's another question for you. Does he even make this team? Like, if the attitude, and that's kind of the wrong word, that he gives off, that he doesn't care, and like I said, there's a story on Three Down Nation by Ian Busby about how is the fire gone? And if that's the case, does this guy even last through training camp, or is he cut? Like, I know they signed him to an extension, but that means nothing. You're not owed anything. Football contracts, they get broken all the time, and that's why they're not guaranteed. Like, if he doesn't even make it through training camp, then this looks even worse, because say what you want about a fifth round pick, but you can get guys to cut in training camp for literally nothing. So giving up a fifth round pick is, and then getting nothing out of it, it's almost like they have to keep him regardless of what happens in camp. No.
And you never know with fifth round pick. I mean, that's late in the draft, yes, but it could turn out to be a gem, you know? So you just never know with the draft.
Keenan LaFrance, the hero of the East final this year, who went and signed a contract with the Rough Riders. He was a fifth round pick. So yeah, it's a crapshoot. The CFL draft has been more and more. You see more of the guys make it. It was a while there where you would look anything past the third round and it was like no one ever made it. But you see more and more now that guys, because I think the talent level is getting better. We're seeing a lot more Canadians play in the NCAA. I think Canadian university football has gotten a lot better over the last 5 years. You're seeing more talented players. So these picks late in the draft are becoming more important, because there's where you find those diamonds in the rough, and they could be your special teams player, or in the case of LaFrance, a guy who comes in, outperforms his contract, and now is pretty much penciled in as a starter for the Rough Riders. So
I question that move.
We will get to Saskatchewan in a little bit when we talk.
I just wanted to throw this out there. Tate gone from Calgary. Does that mean Buckley is the backup quarterback?
Well, they signed Mitchell Gale, so you got to think that maybe Gale's the backup, but maybe there's a competition in the backup. You saw it last year. Dave Dickinson likes Andrew Buckley, and how cool would it kind of be? I know some people get on us and get on people just like, you want to see a Canadian quarterback, but it'd be pretty cool to see a Canadian quarterback be the backup QB.
Yeah, and if Dickinson has the confidence in him, if he thinks he can be a starter in this league, which I think he does, I watched it was like a CFL roundtable with Rod Smith was hosting, and he spoke really highly of Buckley. So, yeah, it'd be cool to see him as a backup. And, you know, I don't want to see anyone get injured, but if Bo Levi went down, then boom, you know, we have a starting Canadian quarterback. See what he can do. Now, if he can't play, I don't want to see him. But if there's some talent there, it'd be pretty exciting to see.
Yeah, maybe we'll get lucky, and the Calgary preseason game will be on television, and we'll get to see Buckley get some actual snap, preseason or not. I'd like to watch that kid play some ball.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so let's move on from players and let's talk about teams. What is the one team whose moves you loved the most?
I'm going to go with the Alouettes. I think they brought in some really good talent. They re-signed some guys. I like the bringing in Javon Johnson. I like them. Well, they didn't bring him in. They extended him. But I like the extension of Javon Johnson and the extension of Brandon Rutley. I think Rutley's a great running back and has a ton of talent and can do some stuff there for them. I know it wasn't a free agent signing, but Durant coming in is huge for them. I like the signing of Ryan Phillips. He's a veteran guy in the secondary that can do a lot of damage for them. I think he still has a couple more years in him. And, you know, as crazy as it sounds, I like them bringing back Boris Beattie. I think that, you know, he had a terrible, terrible year last year. I think it was all in his head. I think if he can reset, come back next year strong, he can be that kicker that we saw in his rookie season. This guy has a booming leg for punts and was pretty accurate on field goals when in his rookie season. So I really like what the Alouettes have done in the offseason. Bringing in Ernest Jackson is huge as well. I mean, this guy's maybe the top receiver in the league right now. So I think they've brought in some really good pieces in Montreal, and I really, really like what they've done.
My only, I can't disagree with anything you said, but my only reservation with the Owls is they are a very old team once again. So
This is true.
For 1 year, I think they're going to be much better. Like I think the East itself, if Durant stays healthy, if Calero stays healthy, and if Harris stays healthy, I think we're seeing three playoff teams coming out of the East this year, and I think it's going to be a dogfight between those three for first place. I especially think it's going to be Montreal. I think Montreal's a team that people are going to, if Durant plays 16, 17, 18 games, there's no doubt in my mind that they're a playoff team. Nick Lewis, SJ Green coming back, Ernest Jackson, that's a hell of a that's a trio that can compete with the Williams, Arsenault, Burnham threesome.
They are aging, you're right. And you look at the linebackers, I mean, they brought back Hebert, they still have Chip Cox. Those guys are getting up there in age as well. The secondary's aging too. I mean, Ryan Phillips is getting up there. There's, to put it in a positive note, there's a lot of veteran experience on this team, but negative side, they're getting up there. But I still like what they've done in the offseason.
No, I definitely do like what they've done for the short term, for sure. Yeah. This is the team that's going to be competing. I would not be shocked if they get to the Grey Cup, to be perfectly honest with you. If they can keep this team relatively healthy, I would not be surprised if they are the East representative in the Grey Cup.
The Montreal, Saskatchewan, Grey Cup.
Oh, again. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, that would crazy with Durant, too. Oh, man. I know. Can you imagine Durant winning a Grey Cup in Montreal the year after he's released? They beat the Riders. Oh, man, there'd be some pissed off Rider fans.
That would be very, very interesting, to say the least.
The team moves I love, it's BC. And this is going to sound like a broken record when I slurped the Chris Williams signing earlier. But with the moves that they made in free agency, as well as the moves that they made just prior to by bringing back their guys, they re-signed Mikhail Brooks. They re-signed Brian Burnham, Stephen Clark. Solomon Elamimian got an extension. They brought back Jeremiah Johnson, Ronnie Yell, Nick Moore. And then they bring in Chris Williams. And they bring in a guy in Tony Burnett, who was with Winnipeg last year, and he's penciled in to be the guy to replace Adam Big Hill. Tony Burnett was a really good player for Winnipeg last year. He's a guy that kind of went under the radar, but losing Big Hill stunk, but they found a guy to maybe fill his void. Not entirely. I don't think Tony Burnett's going to be a guy who's in the conversation for most outstanding defensive player, but he's definitely a guy who can come in and fill that place left by Big Hill. I've been slurping BC pretty much this entire offseason, and it's not going to stop. I look at them and go, if this all comes together, they are going to be a juggernaut. So the BC Lions is the team moves that I love the most.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that. They just look very dangerous on paper, and the talent is there, the coaching is there, everything's in place. They just have to get on the field and produce, and I think they will. I think they'll be, if not on top of the West Division, then very close to it.
Okay, so what's the team moves that you like, but you're a little questionable on some of the things they did?
Argos.
Whoa, Argos, really?
Yes, I think that they did pretty darn good for not having a head coach and a GM. Let's just see who we got here. You know, they bring in Fuller, which we talked about earlier. Dykowski. Now, these are, obviously, it's a like, but, you know, question mark category right here. We talked about it earlier. I really like the Winston Venable. You know, Corey Wattman got an extension. There's some good things in here. They brought in Jeff Matthews. Now, that's questionable as well. But I like what they've done, especially they brought back Matt Black. I like that move. I think he's a solid Canadian. DB can be a starter, was a starter. So, you know, I like what they've done, but there's a lot of question marks with these guys like Fuller and Dykowski. Are they going to be able to stay healthy? Are they past their prime? Stuff like that. But I think there's the potential there to have some pretty good talent brought in by the Argos.
Man, I thought you and I were going to be having a fist fight over who got to pick the Argos for the team moves you hate. So it's a little surprising to see you put them there, but you make a solid point. The team I picked is the Saskatchewan Roughriders. And the reason I put them there is that I like the signings they made. They made a lot of them, but I have some question marks about the guys. Keenan LaFrance, we talked about a little bit earlier. Is that a guy that can be the number one running back for a team for 18 games? I don't know. Did they pay him for a performance in one game because he was great in the East Final, and then he didn't do much in the Grey Cup? So what is the real Keenan LaFrance, the guy that went for 150-plus yards, or the guy that went for around 50 in the Grey Cup? I don't know. The Chad Owens move, as much as I like Chad Owens, that comes with some question marks as well, simply because when's the last time he played a full 18 games in a season? It has been a long time. He's getting up there in age. He's going to compete and he's going to produce if he's on the field, but how many games are you going to get out of CO2? That's the question there. And their big move in bringing in Derek Dennis, I have questions about that as well, because as good as Derek Dennis was, the Calgary Stampeders let him walk, just like they let Stanley Bryant walk. And Stanley Bryant has been a good offensive lineman for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers since he signed there, but he hasn't come close to being that dominant force that he was in Calgary. Maybe that was the Calgary system, where it maximizes these guys' talents and not necessarily the player himself. I think Dennis is a good player. Will he be able to replicate his success in Saskatchewan? So it's not like I dislike what the Riders have done. I think they're a better team today than they were at the end of last season. But I do have some questions about the guys that they added, those three in particular.
Yeah, you got to wonder with the Stampeders, you know, they let Stanley Bryant go. That worked out fine for them, obviously. But maybe they're getting a little overconfident in their system. Maybe they'll be, you know, letting Dennis go will be a big regret of theirs, because you never know. I mean, yes, Brian worked out for them, but it could backfire on them this time. So we'll have to see. Saskatchewan's really trying to do anything they can to be competitive on the field next year, and we'll have to see what happens with them, because they look better at the end of the season. Maybe with the talent brought in, they can take another step towards being a winning team.
Yeah, with the Stampeders, as far as I'm concerned, until proven otherwise, they get the benefit of the doubt for me. Like, every year it's, oh, is this the year the Stamps fall off? Is this the year they take a little bit of a tumble? And then they have what is almost the greatest regular season in CFL history. So, maybe this is the one move. Maybe you're right, they're overconfident, but they've earned that right to be overconfident, I think. Mm-hmm. So, until they take that tumble and they finish the season 9-9 in third place in the West, They get a pass from me on pretty much everything.
Yeah, I remember people were picking the Stamps to not even make the playoffs last year, and
that kind of backfired.
The case. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so last but certainly not least, Mike, what is the one team's moves that you absolutely hate?
It's not that I absolutely hate the moves. I gotta go with the Eskimos. I just don't really. There's not much going on there. I mean, yes, they brought back some retreads in Lawrence and Chambers, and they have re-signed some guys. I like Philip Hunt. I thought he played really well last year, but overall, just very unimpressed with what's going on in the offseason for the Eskimos.
I'm right with you there, pal. I'm not going to pick the Eskimos for mine, but I completely agree with you. They have they got better as the season got on, and it seemed like everyone was on the same page. And now that secondary is almost completely gutted. Patrick Watkins, who I think is past his prime, he's probably not being brought back. Court Parks, who I thought played really well for them, is still a free agent. So there just seems to be some fluctuation in that secondary, and we can speak to trouble in the secondary. The more turnover you have there, the worse it is, because it takes a while for that unit to gel. You want, as much as you want the offensive line to be a cohesive unit, the secondary is probably just as important, with having five guys back there that are all on the same page and can communicate, and making some massive turnover there in one offseason. It's different if you bring a guy in or bring guys in slowly. Like the Ticats added Abdul Kane this year, so that's one guy, but the rest is, you know, it's guys who have been here for a little bit. So I think you can get away with a move like that. And if the Eskimos had lost one or two guys, but they'd kept the majority of it, I think you'd be okay. But I don't know. I agree with you, man. I look at the Eskimos and it's like, I'm never get upset at a team for, like I said, with you give Calgary benefit out. They don't have to go out there and make all the splashy moves, but they had to do something. Like, are they going to start the season with a bunch of rookies playing the secondary? Because if that's the case, they're going to get off to a pretty rough start.
Well, that was the problem last year in Edmonton was, the offense was 100 times better than it was the year before. I mean, the offense was not the problem. The defense and the defensive secondary was the problem, and I don't see them. I haven't seen them do anything to fix that problem. So, I mean, Benavides came in and he kind of had a rough year, and the play on the field was bad, and it just, I think there might be a repeat of that this year. I think the offense is going to have to put up a ton of points to keep up with teams, because I don't see any improvements in the secondary or the defense, really.
So how many 25-point leads are they going to get up this year like they did the Ticats last year?
Yeah, they're going to have to. Even more than that, they're going to have to get like 30, 35-point leads. So we'll see what happens. They could bring in some guys, you never know, but But you got to have a big question mark about the Eskimos at this point.
So the team that I'm picking in this category is the Toronto Argonauts. And it's not so much for who they did bring in, because I think you laid out a pretty decent and compelling case for them getting some.
Oh, I forgot about Cahill Payton too. Khalil Payton.
Oh, yes, they did just bring Khalil Payton. Yeah. Like, I think you laid out a good argument for how they brought in some good players. To me, though, it's the list of players that they lost out on that, holy smokes. Derek Dennis, Ernest Jackson, Abdul Kane, Emmanuel Davis, and Chad Owens were all in some form of negotiations with the Argos. And we talked about this a little bit when we talked about the Trestman and Pop potential move. That is a wealth of talent that they could have pilfered from. They would have taken two guys from a division rival in Ottawa and two more guys from a division rival in Hamilton. It's not just – and this is kind of why I like the Kane signing for the Ticats as much. It's not just benefiting your team. You're hurting one of your main competitors. Like, the Ticats took arguably Ottawa's best defensive back and brought him over to a team in the division. So it helps the Ticats making their secondary better, and it makes Ottawa's worse. Now, Ottawa went out and signed A.J. Jefferson, which I think is a good move, but I don't think he's as good as Abdul Kane. And I think it's the same here. If the Argos could have taken Jackson, and it probably wouldn't have gotten all these guys, let's be honest, unless they have a salary, so much salary cap room they could have afforded them all. But
they were reportedly really close with Ernest Jackson, like really close. So.
And apparently they would have had Derek Dennis if he didn't talk to Michael Copeland. And I think Michael Copeland's taken a little bit too much heat for that. If you listen to the Waggle podcast from a week ago, Davis Sanchez lays out a really great explanation as to why that's being a little bit overblown. It's like Michael Copeland's job is not to sell you on the football side of it. It is to sell you on the city and the overall team, like the organization's plan, not the X's and O's in the field, because he's not an X's and O's guy. So I heard that and I was like, you know what? He makes a lot of sense. But if they could have picked up two or three of these guys, the Argos would be in so much better shape than they are today. They got good players, but the teams around them got better players. Ernest Jackson went to Montreal. Kane and Davis went to Hamilton. The other two guys left the division. And not getting Chad Owens back, come on. Like and we talked about this. For a team that needed a PR win like no one's business, even if this would have just resonated with Argo fans, do you know how happy they would have been to be able to welcome home their MO? Like, it just – to me, that was such a slam dunk if he wasn't going to stay in Hamilton to go back to Toronto. That they whiffed on him, to me, says – as much as you can about the upheaval that occurred in Toronto at that time. Like, come on. You can't bring that guy back. You have to bring him back.
I remember I sent out a tweet around the time he signed with Saskatchewan saying, you know, this speaks volumes about what the situation is in the Toronto Argonauts organization, because we both know that Chad would rather stay close to, you know, the Southern Ontario region. He has a place in Mississauga, I believe, so – you know, Hamilton, Toronto would be his best options, his number one, number two options. So for him to skip over the Argonauts and say no to them and go, you know, basically across the country to the Prairies and Saskatchewan says a lot at the time. Maybe, you know, we talked about it. If Pop and Trestman were in place, I'm sure Owens would have signed. But at the time, the Argos were just, you know, you look at them and you go, why would anyone sign there? Why would any top level talent sign there when there's no plan in place for football operations? It just doesn't make sense. So yeah, to see how Owens pass over the Argos and go to Saskatchewan, it's really surprising.
Are you ready for some questions?
Yes.
All right. We got three here from one of our loyal listeners, Adam, provided us with some great questions this week. So let's get to the first one. He asks, do you think Jeff Reinbold is going to move Craig Butler to Sam linebacker and keep Courtney Steven at safety? Interesting question, Mike. What's your take?
No, I don't think he's going to do that. I think that Butler had some time at that position in Saskatchewan. He signed with Hamilton to be a safety. I think that's the position that he wants to play. And I think Courtney Steven did a great job as cornerback. So, no, I don't see that happening. I think that Butler will be at safety and Stevens will be at corner to start the season.
So I should have a piece coming out on 3 Down Nation soon about my thoughts on what the Ticats might be doing at Sam linebacker and how there are some guys on the roster who could fill that position. One guy I do mention is Craig Butler, because there has been a lot of talk online about, hey, maybe they move Butler to Sam. It helps with the ratio. They can start maybe 4 guys on defense. You keep Steven over at the field corner position and you start Mike Daly at safety, and then Butler starts at Sam, then you have Laurent, and it's a whole ratio thing. But I am with you. I don't think that happens. One of the rumored reasons that he came to Hamilton, like you said, was that he did not want to play Sam linebacker in Saskatchewan, which is where they had him playing in 2013. He had a great season there, but it's not the position he's comfortable playing. He came to Hamilton because they said, you're going to be a safety. I think, especially because he's coming off an injury, I don't think they're going to move him positions. So I totally expect him to be the safety for the Ticats, not the Sam linebacker. And I think Courtney Steven will be the field corner. If I had to make a guess, and you'll be able to read this on 3Down Nation, there's one guy on the team that I think is perfectly suited to play Sam linebacker, and that's Dominique Ellis. He's a guy who's going to be bumped out of the starting rotation in the secondary because he's a halfback, and the halfbacks are spoken with Kane and Davis. And I think with Ellis's combination of coverage skills and his physicality, I think he's a perfect candidate that's on the team right now. If they don't go and get, they find some American free agent in one of their camps and bring him to camp and he sort of blows the doors off everyone, I think Ellis could be a perfect internal candidate to be the team's Sam linebacker in 2017.
Well, in that position, correct me if I'm wrong, is there's a lot of, coverage responsibilities. So I like that idea as well. I mean, bringing in a halfback to play that position would, you're not going to get those mismatches necessarily against speedy receivers if you have a guy like Ellis who can cover and has speed.
So moving on to the next question. Assuming the Ticats start four Canadians on the offensive line, personally, I think that's a pretty big assumption, but that's the question, so let's go with it. Do you put Brandon Revenberg or Ryan Bombin at right tackle? Mike?
That's a tough one. I know that Bombin has had experience all over the offensive line. He's a very versatile player. And I think Revenberg did play tackle at one time last year, but I'm gonna go with Bomb and put him out there just because of his experience. Now I don't think that they're gonna have four Canadian offensive linemen, but the question is that. So I'm gonna have to go with Bombin.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Revenberg mostly just for the sake of giving a different answer because I too don't think that we're gonna see a Canadian play. I don't think you're gonna see four Canadians on the offensive line. I think the ratio is gonna be three guys on defense. I think it's gonna be Steven, Butler, and Laurent. I think you're gonna see the three guys on the offensive line in Revenberg, Bombin, and Filer. And then I think you're gonna get Spencer Watt as the receiver. So I think those are your guys there. And then they can move things around and mess with a little bit. If they do move Butler to Sam, then maybe they start four Canadians on defense and then they only start three Canadians on the offensive line. There's your seven Canadians. So maybe they start two defensive tackles. They could start Ted Laurent and Michael Atkinson, although there's not a ton of backups there. And I think Atkinson probably is better as the backup to Laurent, and they can sort of
rotate
them in. And I think I think Atkinson can start in this league, but I think he's better suited for this team, at least as the number two guy behind Ted Laurent. So it's possible they can move it. So Revenberg started a little bit there last year. He was the guy that they decided when they were going to kick someone out to right tackle last year, that he was the guy they picked. I think there's a reason for that. I think there would continue to be a reason for that. So they've done it before. I'd say if that's to happen, I say he's the guy that goes out there.
Yeah, we differ on that, but that's fine. That's good for the show. And, I think, to be honest with you, I think it's going to be three in the middle, three Canadians in the middle, Fulton, and Jake Olsen comes back from his long injury. And hopefully he's the same guy he was before he got injured.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's Olsen and Lewis who are going to battle, I think, in camp and in the preseason. I think whoever performs the best out of those two guys, I think Olsen will get the leg up because he was great as the team's left tackle before he got hurt.
Massive.
Over a year ago. So I think if you could have Fulton and Olsen, I even like Jeremy Lewis, but I think that's the battle you see. I think you're right. I think it's Fulton, it's the three Canadians, and then Olsen on the other side. I think that's your offensive line going into 2017. Last question, Mike. Oh, you got something to say? No.
I like that offensive line right there. I think if Olsen is the guy he was, he's been off for a while. He's a massive dude. I think he's like 6'8". Is that how tall he is? I think he's
– Yeah, he's you know what? I will look it up for you. But, yeah, he's a big, bad hombre.
Yeah, so those solid three guys in the middle, two guys on – two American dudes on the outside. I think that's a winning combination there, Joshua.
6'8", 315, sir. That is a big dude.
Yeah, that's a presence right there.
Oh, he's from Wisconsin. They breed him pretty big out there.
All right, yeah, maybe a farm boy or something.
All right, so last question of the week, Mike. Do you think there is any chance the Ticats start five American wide receivers?
I think there's a chance. I mean, anything can happen, but I think that they'll stick in that one Canadian receiver on in that position on the far side of the field that doesn't get many balls thrown his way. I think he'll just be a filler. Like, you know, I think Spencer Watt would probably be that guy. They re-signed Javon Aprile, so I think he'll be – I probably butchered his name there, but he'll probably be the backup to Watt, and they'll probably start four Americans and one Canadian.
That's what I see, too, unless they do start four Canadian offensive linemen, or if they start two Canadian defensive tackles, or if they move Butler down and start Daly and Steven in the secondary. Like, that's the only way I can kind of see them starting five American wide receivers. So it is possible, but I personally think it's very unlikely. I think I'm with you. I think we're going to see the four Americans. And to me, it's going to be Tolliver, Tasker, Timms, and hopefully, you know, praise be to Jeebus. Hopefully it's going to be Terrell Sinkfield. And then I think you see Brandon Banks will get sprinkled in on offense. I think Junior Collins is still a guy that they can rely on. I think, and then we'll see the guy who I think is going to be Spencer Watt is going to be your fifth wide receiver. That's going to be your Canadian spot. So anything is possible, especially at this time of year. I just don't think it's likely. I'm looking at four Americans and one Canadian in the receiving corps.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. And just pray to the flying spaghetti monster that Sinkfield comes in.
You got it, brother. No doubt. Man, thinking about him in there, and it harkens back to 2014, 2015 when he was a game breaker for this team.
And he could be a returner as well. I mean, he has that talent as well. You could put him with Banks again, and you know he really developed into a great receiver when he was with us in his last year. So yeah, I'm salivating at the idea as well.
Okay, buddy, that's it for this week. So everyone out there, remember you can subscribe to the show on iTunes or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to hit us up with some questions, feel free to do that. You can find us on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
You can find me at joshsmith_82. And you can be like Adam and post those questions on the 3downnation comment section. That's where we got his. So feel free to throw them our way there. So that was episode 68 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
The Angelo Mosca episode.
You know what? Hey, we said the Peter Diakowski episode last time, and then he got cut. So hopefully you haven't jinxed Angelo Mosca in some terrible way. Like, we're going to find out in a week that he, you know, broke his arm or something.
They're signed with the Argos for that season.
Could you imagine the betrayal? At 80 years old, he turns heel. Yeah. It'd be a great wrestling move. Yeah. We know Ange was a wrestler, but I can't see him do it. That would be the ultimate heel turn.
That'd be NWO like Hulk Hogan type stuff right there. So it's yeah, like Ange will never turn heel on Ticats.
No, it's like when Steve Austin shook Vince McMahon's hand at WrestleMania. It's like, what is going on? No.
See, there you go. Happen. We threw in our little whoops. a little wrestling comment there. One each episode.
Gotta meet the quota. Anyway, that was episode 68 of Podski Wee Wee. As Mike said, the Angelo Mosca episode. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.